kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, and I am still under the weather a little bit. So instead of having a co-host here to help me out, I'm going to do an interview all by myself because I'm a genius. Joining me from Macon Games, Nick Macon, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Did I say the name right?
Yes, you did.
I would hope so with that company name.
Yeah, I mean, when we decided to set up a company, it was a foregone conclusion. We were going to use our surname. It was going to be Macon Games.
It would have just been weird if the company name was Macon Games, and then I introduced you, and you're like, no, it's Macon, Nick Macon.
Yes.
Well, then is it Macon Games? No, it's Macon Games. Who would say Macon Games, you moron?
Yeah, it's Macon.
So you were here to talk about your brand new game, Raging Justice. For those who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
Okay, so Raging Justice, it's a retro-inspired kind of nostalgic game. It's a side-scrolling brawler. It's inspired by what for me was the formative years of me becoming a gamer and then getting into game development, which was the late 80s, early 90s, the arcade scene, the golden age of arcade games. Now, for me, the top game in that era was the beat-em-up, the Final Fights, the Double Dragons, then the Street Fighters, Street Fighter 2 and stuff like that. These were the games I always sought out, and these are the games that inspired me to become a game dev in the first place. And after all these years, I now have the opportunity to do a game myself. I'm going to pick the game that I've always wanted to make, and it's a side-scrolling brawler. So Raging Justice is trying to be a nostalgic take on these things, to take classic ideas from the genre and bring them bang up to date with something that looks fantastic on your modern HD screen. You know, it sounds great through your surround sound, and it plays bloody well as well. Oh, at least I hope it does.
No, it's awful. Why are you on here?
I know, I'm a little bit biased. So when I say something plays great that I've done, I feel a little bit like, yeah, I shouldn't be saying that. That's for other people to say. But still, yeah, that's what Raging Justice is. It's a side-scrolling brawler. It plays kind of how people imagine it to play, but it plays. Oh, how do we describe it? We were trying to be, as I say, nostalgic rather than copying stuff. We're not trying to be a classic game or a retro game. We're trying to be inspired by that era to play as well as people remember some of the games playing, because some games, not all of them, some games, once you go back and play them, they don't play as well as you remember.
Yeah, it's those rose-tinted glasses.
Yeah, we want Raging Justice. The idea is to play as well as you remember those games. It's like, oh, wow, I love this kind of game. Oh, wow, this is exactly how it used to play, and it feels so much fun, and have fun and smile and just have a good time while you're playing it.
What is a game that you loved in the past that you went back and played recently, and you're just like, wow, how did I ever love this game? It is awful.
Oh, I don't know, because I tend to self-censor now. It's like, I will play games that I've played recently and I've enjoyed. So it's like, you know, I'll go back and I'll play a Bubble Bobble or something and still enjoy it, because I know I'm going to enjoy it because I've played it in the last like year or something. Or, you know, from the Brawlers, the Final Fights and Vendetta. These games are games that I still know are still fun because I've played them in the last few years. In terms of one that I haven't played in a long time, oh, I couldn't think of one, to be honest.
I kind of go with most games from like the N64 and the PS1 era is that a lot of them still play really well, but visually and just control wise, they feel so old and clunky because, you know, they are old and clunky.
But yeah, I kind of skip that era in terms of when I want to play classic games, I go more to the Super Nintendo era or the, nice. You know, the Sega Mega Drive Genesis era. That was my early teens era, and I go to that rather than N64. I loved the N64 when it came out. Don't get me wrong. I had one, I played the hell out of Mario 64 and 1080 as well. That was a fantastic snowboarding game. But yeah, I tend not to go back to the N64 right now. It's not retro enough for me yet.
Even just like trying to go back and play GoldenEye these days, that game does not hold up well. People have such fond memories of, oh man, I used to play that with my frat mates in college all the time. We would spend a weekend just playing GoldenEye and eating pizza and having a party. And I guarantee if you sat down with a group of friends to play GoldenEye today, after, I don't know, a match, two matches, you'd be like, where's Call of Duty? I'm sick of this.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It's so clunky and old, and that's part of what I really, really enjoy about your game is the visual style. It has a style that, to me, doesn't look like it could get old. My first impressions when I saw your game in motion was, holy shit, this is Robot Chicken, the fighting game.
Yeah, we do have a kind of stop motion feel to it, definitely, because we've gone for that pre-rendered look, which was, it is a retro style. It's not just something new and picked out of thin air. It's a style that was kind of, it was almost becoming popular just before the PlayStation came around. You know, you had Donkey Kong Country, you had Killer Instinct. These were using 3D models, but to create the sprite to make the 2D gameplay, but look almost 3D, almost chunky. Mm-hmm. And it gave it that stop motion feel, which you saw in games. I don't know, Mortal Kombat felt a bit stop motion. Clay Fighter felt a bit stop motion. It was an era where they were trying something out, and then PlayStation came along and N64 came along and said, oh, 3D. Oh, why would we ever want to do sprites anymore? And we had the, as you eloquently put, great looking N64 and PlayStation games that the 3D holds up so well in the modern age. But
all
yeah, we decided 12 to go.
Polygons look fantastic in Mario.
Yeah. Yeah, they have a nostalgia again about them, I suppose, but you can't say they look fantastic anymore. So yeah, we went with a style which had that kind of feeling of something retro, but HD. We went, you know, we want it to look good on your Xbox One. We want it to look good on the PlayStation or the Switch. We want it to look modern and feel fresh in a way as well. We could have gone with a cartoon style. We could have gone with a pixel art style, but it's been done, and it's been done so well. We wanted something different, something that stood out.
Makes sense. So many brawlers these days are either the retro pixel brawlers or, you know, something like Castle Crashers where it's all hand-drawn and crazy over the top.
They're done so well as well. It's not that it's a bad style. It's a great style, but it's been done. We'll try something different. We'll try something that looks, as I say, it looks HD. It looks new, but also old. It's kind of a difficult balance to get. We know that for some people, our graphics, they're not what they expect. They expect, when they hear, oh, it's a game inspired by the classics, they expect the pixel art or the kind of old-fashioned look. And when they see what we've got, they're kind of, it jars a little bit initially, but after a few minutes of play or watching someone play it, you realize, actually, it's not janky. It is quite smooth. The gameplay flows and is immediate, despite us going for the stop frame kind of lower frame rate than a 3D game would have gone with.
Yeah.
So yeah, we think we've got something with it. You know, it feels right, and people seem to be really enjoying it. And as I say, even those that are a little bit kind of unsure at the start, they kind of they're won over by the graphics when they realize, oh yeah, that's going to look new. That's going to look fresh. It's going to look great on my screen.
What has the early word from the community been regarding the visuals in terms of seeing trailers and gameplay footage? Because when I was talking to my friend about it last night, I told him, as much as I love this visual style, I have a feeling it's going to be fairly divisive among people who just look at it and you're like, oh, this looks like Pit Fighter, and it just feels like,
yes,
janky, and like, why is it like this? And then there's going to be people like me who are like, this looks like Claymation. This looks like Robot Chicken. This is fucking awesome.
It definitely has divided people. I mean, as I say, people, they kind of come at it thinking, oh, it's going to be this beautiful pixel art style because of it being a sprawler, or it's going to have, you know, crisp cartoon vector graphics and things. And when they see it, they do kind of have that, ooh, it's not what I thought. Ooh, I'm not sure about that. And then, because our frame rate isn't for the character movements, not for the game is 60 frames per second. Don't get me wrong. The game is high frame rate. The actual animations, we've gone for that stop motion feel, that slightly lower frame rate than the gameplay runs at, on purpose to give it an old fashioned feel at the same time as playing smoothly. And that kind of does jar with a number of people. But there are plenty of people who just go, yeah, I love it. It's just different. It's new. It's not what they expect, and they like it for that reason. And talking to people who aren't sure about it, they come over to it. Some of them, well, it's not my cup of tea, but I'll play it. And when they play it, or they've played it at a show, or you know, some of the guys who have had a preview code and they've played it, they go, actually, yeah, no, it's ace. I love it. It plays like I want it to play, and they get through the visual side if they're not sure, and they come around to loving it. And it's, yeah, I just love the feedback we've started getting now that we've had some previews out, and when we've taken it to various shows, it's definitely a boost for us.
You mentioned that the game does run at a solid 60 frames per second. How technically do you make a game run 60 frames per second but have character animations look and feel like they're running at like 20, 24 frames per second?
So the game, everything about the game, we run at the fastest frame rate we can. The technology behind the game is relatively simple. They are still just sprites. So from a point of view of the code, it's not the most complicated technology-wise. We don't have large 3D models and lighting and all this stuff like that. We just have the sprites. So technology-wise, there's no problem running at 60. The movements, every character moving on screen, the responsiveness to the button presses, these things all run at 60. These are all kind of as instant as you can get on a modern game. You know, we try and you press a button, we want the action to kick in straight away. You know, we don't want any delay. We don't want any kind of lead up to the moves. This has got to feel like an arcade game. It's got to be that fun, instant feel. The actual flow of the animations, yeah, some of them run a bit slower because of the style we've gone with, but it doesn't feel slow. Because you've got that instant kind of, you press a button, it reacts instantly. You don't feel that the animation is holding you back at all. It feels, you know, snappy. And yeah, it's not pulling back. It feels like it's the style. It's been chosen to go like this. And if you look back at Double Dragon or something, they didn't have a huge number of frames. Their animations were running at 12 frames a second, even if the game itself was running at 60. You know, we're trying to feel, as I say, like the era as much as anything.
Yeah. You mentioned Double Dragon. Have you played the, what was it, Double Dragon 4 came out recently?
The last one I played was Neon. I quite enjoyed it, I think is the right way to describe it.
Yeah, you went out on a high note there.
I haven't played four. It was on my list of games to play in the last, because I think was it 12 months ago, or give or take? It wasn't that long ago that I think four came out, but I was so busy I just didn't have time to even look at games.
It was disappointing, to say the least. After how amazing Neon was, I'm a bit biased with Double Dragon Neon because my buddy did the music for the game.
Yeah.
I loved Double Dragon Neon. I thought it was easily the best game in the series. Excuse me, sorry. And then Double Dragon 4 comes out, and it pretty much goes directly back to the NES style of play. Ooh. But it just doesn't feel right. There's just something to it that just doesn't click in the right way, which I think is a bummer.
I mean, feel is everything in this kind of game. You know, you can do pretty much any graphic style you want. You can go 3D. I think, was Neon, the characters were quite 3D, weren't they? Or were they 3D? It's been a while, but
I don't know if they were 3D models on a 2D plane, or if they were just kind of like your game where they were all sprites, but they were still modeled in 3D. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, it wasn't, as you say, it wasn't the NES style. It wasn't a classic sprite style. It was a different style, and it played well with that style. And the gameplay, I think, can be divorced from the style, the graphic look of it. And the gameplay is what's king. You have to get that right. You have to get that feeling just right. Well, in some ways, I guess we're lucky being a new game. You know, we're not Double Dragon. We're not Streets of Rage or Final Fight or anything like that. We don't have to nod at a previous game when designing and implementing Rage Injustice. We have free rein to take bits from here or try bits from there and mix them up and see if they work and have our own feel. So we're lucky that we won't get that particular form of disappointment of, oh, this doesn't feel like a Double Dragon game, or this doesn't feel like a whatever type game, because it isn't.
Yeah.
You know, we can get hopefully the right feel, taking elements from all of them and then throwing our own little twists into it and turns, and see if people gel with it. But it's our own game. So that's one thing I'm quite glad with us having done our own thing, is we haven't had the kind of the history of, okay, do a game that feels like Double Dragon but feels new, do a game that feels like, do you know what I mean? That I think would be a lot harder to pull off well.
Yeah,
for us, you know, at least, you know, I'd love to, don't get me wrong, given half a chance to to work on one of these properties, I'd love to. You know, they are my childhood, or they are the kind of games that got me into gaming and got me into game development. Given half a chance, I'd bite someone's hand off to work on something like Streets of Rage.
Well, hey, if the game does well and people start taking notice to it, maybe you could start hitting up Sega and be like, hey, you guys haven't had a new Streets of Rage for a while. Or hit up Microsoft and be like, hey, Battletoads could really use some love right now.
Oh, I'd love to.
That's the way to do it. Get the game, make sure it's good, get your name out there, and then just start begging other people to make their games instead. So what kind of games and what kind of game mechanics did you use as inspiration in making Raging Justice?
So, I mean, the obvious two that we had a look at the beginning was Streets of Rage 2 and Final Fight. They were the kind of the two that have stood the test of time in popularity as much as anything. You know, they're the ones that people remember, and they're the ones that keep showing up on, like, you know, on new consoles of, you know, when they do an emulator version of it and what have you. They're the ones that endure. So we would look back at those two and a little bit of Double Dragon, but we were kind of more of the Streets of Rage and Final Fight kind of era. We also looked at the arcade games because we wanted to feel as close to an arcade game as we could. We looked at The Punisher, Captain Commando. We looked at Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, Vendetta. We just played through all those, you know, a few times at the start.
So you looked at the games I played in the arcade as a child.
Yeah, they were everything. The things, we looked at those, and we tried not to spend the time analyzing them too much. It was more a case of, let's have a play of them. Let's play through them, come away from it. Try not to sit there and go, okay, what are the timings on this and how did they do that and what moves did they have and come away from it and what did we remember, rather than analyzing it as we went. So we could kind of pick the things that we felt were the most memorable, rather than sitting there and thinking, okay, we've just played this. Let's have a conversation. Let's say what we like, what we want, what we're going to take from this. It was more a case of we've played them. We've got them kind of fresh in our memory. We've got some that we kind of still hold dear from our youth that we really remember certain aspects of it, and we'll design our own game, and maybe we'll say, okay, well, we'll take that and we'll use it, and it will actually be feel like it's inspired by this. So it's small things. Like one of the characters does a rear elbow move, which was one of the things that I remember most strongly from Double Dragon, is that back elbow, because it was relatively powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's things like that.
That jumping knee was always brutal in Double Dragon.
Yeah, there was that. There was the way the grapples worked. They always had the enemies that they had kind of were held a bit lower than on Final Fight, I think. And that was the Double Dragon things. From Vendetta, it was hitting people on the ground, the kind of the curb stomp, or the thumping them while they're prone. That was something we felt. We want that in there. We want that to. We don't want to feel that you can't hit somebody while they're down, because you would just stomp on them if you were in a fight. I mean, you know, not everyone plays clean.
Yeah. It's better than knocking an enemy down and then just standing there waiting. Like, come on.
You wait for him to get up. Come on, get up, get up, get up, and then I can punch you. No, I'll punch you while you're on the ground.
And then he gets up with an unblockable rising attack and knocks you down. And then he has a ground attack, so he's just punching you. And
it's trying to keep the fight flowing as much as possible is what we try to do with the designing of the fight. Definitely is kind of not have you sitting and waiting too long. You know, throw something at them, punch them, kick them, throw them over, and knock them into other people. Yeah. So, but the things that we try to be inspired by, all these different elements, some of the bad guys are inspired a bit more by this or that or the other, but on the whole, we're trying to do it more on our kind of feelings of the genre rather than analyzing it too much. It's got to play how we remember the games and how we want the games to play.
Yeah.
You know, we try to, although we did, as I say, play through games, and, you know, Vendetta, we sat one evening and just played on MAME, like start to end. Infinite continues, and just like, oh, we love this bit, or we love that bit, and, oh, we should have something like this and that. And a lot of it may be just visual elements, like with a baseball bat in Raging Justice, when you hit an enemy, they'll fling up the screen and splat on a wall. And that was something that was in Vendetta that we thought was really funny. So we'll have something similar to that. You know, there's other things like, I don't know, on one of the levels, we've got a tractor. You can get on the tractor and ride around and knock down enemies. It's just funny. There's no
It was so fun too. It was like, why is there a tractor? Oh, I could ride the tractor in this thing. Oh, I can run over everybody in this thing. Yes, I'm going to run over everybody in this.
Even your co-op partner. You have to fight over that tractor. We've made sure of that. But yeah, it's something that we spent far too long working on that damn tractor. But we wanted it to be fun because it was a kind of definitely an amusing element to the game because you can't be too serious in a game like this. But throwing that in there, and we thought, well, it's kind of a bit inspired by the likes of Golden Axe, where you had the ride on things, but it doesn't play anything like those, like the dragons and the chicken beast, whatever it was in Golden Axe. But it's that kind of take an element that we remember and we have a fond memory for and throw it in the game and work it our own way. So the tractor, it plays the way that we want it to play. You know, it's fun. But yeah, we spent a couple of months or so just getting that up and running and working. When it was fun, we were thinking, we have one tractor in the game. How are we? We're going to have to try and find something else. So we actually found we could fit kind of stylistically ride on lawnmower in one of the later levels. So there's not just the one ride on in it. We thought we've got to have at least two because it is that
much fun. Yes. I'm so excited now. See, now what the game really needs next, I don't know if this could be like a free update or DLC, it needs tractor racing.
That's on my plan of things that I always wanted to do. I mean, I have a plan of things of, I could have never released this game, put it that way. I could be working on this game for the next 10 years and still not be happy with releasing it and still have ideas of things that I want to put into it. You know, we came to a point where we need to release this because we could go on this forever and it's a really good game right now. So let's finish it and release it, but let's have a plan. Let's have a plan of things that we could do. So we've got lists of ideas, loads of different things. Some will make the cut, some won't. Some will try out and it won't work. Others we'll come up with along the way when we're trying to support it. And I mean, assuming that it does well enough, hell yeah, we're going to support it with updates. You know, we're going to add new features or maybe even new characters or new ways of playing. And tractor racing is definitely one of those things that, you know, I would love to have a go at and see if I can get it to feel right and get it to play right. If it doesn't play well enough, I don't want to just throw in something that doesn't quite work, even if it sounds like it'd be funny, you know? So we're going to, if we have the time to do something like that, yeah. I mean, from my point of view, I've already thought, what game would I be inspired by? And for me, there was a game on the Neo Geo called Neo Drift Out, which was the kind of isometric projection rally game on the arcades. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that would actually, the camera angle would work with the tractor. But then I need to figure out how to get the tractor to play more like a racing game than the one it does in Raising Justice right now. And I can't promise that I'll ever have the time to do this. But yeah, tractor racing would be awesome, I think.
I would definitely buy Tractor Racing DLC.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, on our plan for DLC, we're intending to support it with free updates. We've not really got a plan, at least initially, with paid updates. I just want people to buy the game, enjoy the game, and assuming it does well enough, we'll support it with a few extras. You know, the first thing that we haven't done for launch that I've wanted to do, and I need to go to the code in the next couple of weeks and figure out exactly how much work it is adding online. So that's one of the things that I think we kind of need to really look at for Raging Justice is online cooperative play.
Yeah, that's one thing one of my friends was saying, the same one that I was referring to earlier. He dropped by last night and we were playing a couple of rounds. He's like, man, this is awesome. Does it have online? I can't wait to play with you. I'm like, no. So far, it's local only, but that's a good question to ask during the show. So you already answered it. I don't have a question to ask.
Well, you can ask me now and I'll answer it again. But yeah, no.
So online. Are there any online plans for this game?
Yes. Online is something that I've always wanted to put out online in this. It was always on the plan. But as I said before, we got to a point where the game is good enough game now. It has everything we need for launch. It would be great if we can have online, but it just would have meant delaying it. I don't know how long it would have meant delaying it. So we pushed to get the game finished, and now we're going to push to look at how we can support it, and online's on the plan. We're going to look into it. We're going to see how much effort it is, how much time it's going to take from me, how much QA it's going to need, all these boring crap that is game development. We need to do that and decide whether we can do it. If we can, hell yeah. I want online in there, because for me, that's how I would more likely play it. Most of the friends that I grew up with, I would have played these games back as a kid. They don't live nearby now, and even if they did, you're not going to just be able to meet up every night and play it, whereas online, I could just, sit and play with them any one evening of the week with no big need to organize a load of things to, all the kind of stuff that you have to organize around life when you hit our age, well, my age.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, online's definitely on the plan.
So, by your age, what age are you?
I'm 40.
Well, I'm close behind. I'm at 37 right now, so.
There you go. You're a youth, then. You're a youngin'.
I am. Don't you dare call me a youngin'. My bones creak. I'm achy. I have problems with my sciatica nerve. I am not a youngin'. Cole, the other co-host who was unavailable to join this because we only got the one key to play, and I didn't want to bug her with yet another interview that she's had to deal with. She's the youngin', because she's younger than me, so.
Fair enough.
I don't know if she's still hanging out in chat or not, but I can't wait to get, like, threats of she's going to beat me with her cane soon. So you mentioned playing. There it is. She says, I walk with a cane. Yep. we could go back to the host who was on before her, CJ. He's like 20.
Oof.
So he's the youngin'. He's the goddamn kid needs to get off our lawn. Oh, man. You mentioned playing a bunch of older games and looking for inspiration. Was there any really, really cool ideas that you saw in these older games that you thought, I would love to put this in our game, but at the same time, I don't ever want to have this in my game?
Oh, there were a few things. Usually it was to do with particular bosses or particular characters that we weren't sure, and we thought, no, we're not going to do something like that. And we looked back and thought, we might do it in an update, so we're not going to say never. It's things like, going back to Streets of Rage games, there was the third one, there was a kangaroo, a playable kangaroo. It's like, why would you want something like that? But then I've had so many people saying, are you going to have a kangaroo or something like that? Because they remember it, These things where you just think, oh, it's a bit silly, it's a bit daft, but then that sticks in people's mind. So there were a few things where we weren't sure about and we've not done, but part of our updates is we're going to see what people want,
If you're looking for character ideas, I got one for you. Since there is a circus level in the game,
yep,
you should take a bear with like a frilly clown, necklace, whatever clowns wear, a collar, a frilly rainbow colored collar and like a clown hat on a bear.
On a unicycle.
Yes. Oh my God. That could be his vehicle for the tractor racing DLC. Every character gets their own vehicle. The bear gets a tricycle or a unicycle. Either one would work, really.
Mm, yeah. Need to add that to the list.
There you go. Write it down. All I ask is if a playable bear shows up, I want to see a special thanks to me in the credits. That's all I want. One day, one of these bad ideas is going to show up in a game, and my name will be in the credits, and there will be a permanent record of the awful things I've done in life. Oh, man. So I'm guessing you've showed this game off at a bunch of conventions and shows before.
Yeah.
Any kind of really fun stories of people who either were really, really good at the game, someone who was really awful at the game, people who just like didn't get it, just any kind of fun stories?
Oh, there was one time this is when we were relatively early with it, but we're showing it at this place, and I think it had a lot of people who were doing like a student game design course type thing. And I think this guy wanted to prove himself as, he can come up with ideas and stuff. He didn't really like the game. His feedback to me was, I don't really like the music. I think you should change the music. I don't really like the graphic style. I think it should be a slightly different graphic style. And I'm not really a fan of the brawler, the beat 'em up. I think you should try something different. So it was effectively his idea for improving the game was to make a completely different game.
That's not feedback.
No, but he spread it out in such a way that it felt like, oh, he's telling me what he doesn't like about the sound effects or the music. Okay. Oh, he doesn't like the graphic style. Okay, fair enough. He's not a fan of how it plays. So how would you want to change it? And he was almost suggesting a point and click adventure. And I'm thinking, that's not what feedback is. But that stuck in my mind as the best piece of feedback we ever had is, this guy doesn't like the game. Let's make something different for him.
How much feedback could you give and just completely alter the game?
I don't know. I spoke to a few other devs and he said, oh, it was that guy, was it? So I think he did that to a few other people who were showing the games that day. Maybe he had an idea and he just wanted a team to do it for him. I'm not sure, but
maybe. I hope that guy got a special thanks in the credits. Thank you for telling us the game that you didn't want, but we made it anyway. That's just ballsy to go up to someone. Yeah, what did you think of our game? Well, I wasn't really a fan of the visuals of the game. I wasn't really a fan of the music of the game. That could be adjusted. I wasn't a fan of like the whole punching and kicking aspect of it. There's a jump feature in the game, which I didn't like. Enemies showed up. Like, where did those guys come from? How necessary are them? Like, where are the hidden object puzzles in this game? Where are the door puzzles in this game? Like, I'm not finding any of that in here. It's like you made a beat 'em up. This isn't an adventure game.
It was pretty much that. It was amusing. There's nothing you can take in a kind of, well, I'll take that on board and I'll make some changes when I get back. Nope. Nope. It was, oh, thank you for your suggestions. I'm not making that game. Thank you.
Thank you for your suggestions. Is there any other feedback? Anything else you didn't like? Yeah, your fucking face. And then runs away.
It was close to that, I think. But most of the feedback we get from players are people seem to enjoy it, which is better than that, really. You know, we have taken the game to conventions and to shows and things. Because of the style of game it is, someone walking past will see it, and they already kind of have that kind of pang of, oh, I know this kind of game. I'll probably enjoy it. So they'll come over and play it, and then they'll go away and enjoy it. You know, they'll come back. We had people that came back day after day. We were at PAX in Boston a month ago. And there was one person that was playing it, and she came back day after day to play the game. And on the last day, she came back and said, I'm on my way out. I just need to play it one more time before I go, because I love this game. And it's just those that stick in my mind in a more positive way than change your entire game to a point and click. But that was kind of feedback we got from a lot of shows. We are the kind of game that it is what it is. In some ways, you know, if you look at it and you think, I like scrolling brawlers, you like this. It is a good game. We've done a good game. It's that kind of game. You know, we don't have to sit somebody down and talk them through the ideas behind this, the ideas behind that, and how to play this and how to play that. Here's a joypad. Sit down, have a play. You know, I don't want to sit down and have to talk you through and chat and explain the motivations for this part of the design and that part of the design. I want you to pick up the joypad, play the game, have fun. If there's something you're struggling on, yeah, I'll tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, try this, try that, because part of it is quite difficult at times. You know,
try pressing buttons.
Yeah, we only use the face buttons of a joypad. You know, we do have, I think one of the moves is also mapped to the a shoulder button, but the game can be played with the four face buttons and a D-pad. You know, it's trying to keep it as simple as we can.
Hey, so it's the KISS method. That's the best method there is.
Yes. Yes, it is. Exactly that. Keep it stupid simple. Or simple stupid. I can never remember which way around it is, but
keep it simple work. Stupid. Yeah. I love it because you get to insult the person you're telling it to. What's the KISS method? Keep it simple, stupid. I'm sorry.
But yeah. It needs to be that kind of really simple pick up and play. It again harks back to the whole thing that we kept going back to, which is, imagine we're an arcade game. If we're an arcade game, someone puts their coin in. If they're not having fun by the end of that credit, they're not coming back and giving us another coin. So it has to be instant. It has to be pick up and play. You have to get kind of just pick the joypad up and play it, and you either have fun or you don't. You either come back and play again or you don't. And hopefully people come back and play again.
That actually made me think of something unbelievably scary, where what if we saw a model of game pricing like that happen in homes? Where you download a game free, but every time you wanted to play it, it cost a quarter.
Yeah, it would have to be a bloody good game.
Yeah. That is scary. I'm even scared mentioning it on the show just in case someone important ever listens. I'd be like, that's genius. Think of the money we could get on this.
I think some of the early releases on mobile that were like arcade classic things, I can't remember which company did it, but I think they had you could pay a microtransaction for a day's play on it rather than a single play. Or you could buy the game for not much more. But yeah, although that worked well in the arcade because it was something different to home, you know, the arcades would go in the cinemas. They were the big screen experience for video games back in the day. They weren't what you could get at home. But right now, you can't really do much different. I mean, your Xbox One or the One X or the PS4 Pro, the fidelity of the graphics you get on those damn things, you're not going to improve at an arcade anymore. So
true.
That kind of experience has gone away. And yeah, I hope that someone doesn't pick up your idea there.
Call of Duty Black Ops 12. It's a free-to-play download, but every time you want to play the game, it's 50 cents for one life. If you die, you know, you can continue for a quarter as long as you continue the stage you're on. If you want to buy the game outright, like every other arcade game, it's going to be $1,200.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting idea. I wonder whether Activision would continue after that.
It wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me if they did that. At the stage we're at with some of these game companies, I wouldn't be shocked anymore. Oh, man. So when you're not working on Raging Justice, when you're not developing, what games are you enjoying?
Well, recently I've not had a lot of time to enjoy games, but now that I've finished, I actually went, because I subscribed to the PlayStation Plus, I went back through the last 12 months of that because I hadn't really played anything. And I started playing Metal Gear Solid Phantom Pain. Because I'd never got around to playing it and always intended to. I've only played a little bit of it and I'm quite enjoying it, other than the first bit where I spent half an hour looking at somebody's bottom, it seemed. I'm crawling around. I don't know whether you played it, but you start in a hospital and the first part of it, I'm thinking, is this it? I'm going to be looking at somebody in a surgery gown's backside for the whole time. But it became good when I actually became, past it and became proper Snake and playing the game. But besides that, the only other game I've played recently, I think, is Shadow of Mordor, the first one.
Nice.
I'm still playing it. It's something that I've played throughout the last probably 6 months or so, just on and off when I've had a few hours to play here and there, which I guess you could say it's a modern beat-em-up, really. I mean, I'm going around beating up orcs until I get to a boss orc, and then I fight the boss orc.
Shadows of Mordor is one of the few large-scale open-world action games that I've actually completed in recent years, just because games these days, they just get so big and there's so much to do in them, and there's so many of them anymore.
There's too many of them.
Just don't have time to do it.
Yeah, I mean, life just gets in the way, unfortunately. I'm no longer a student. I can just sit there and spend an entire evening or three, and then half the next day playing games.
And I'm not just some unemployed moron who gets to play a game for as long as he wants. I'm an unemployed moron doing a podcast where I have to play like six games a week instead.
Yeah. No, I don't play as many games as I want to. There is a backlog I have of loads of games that I can't wait to sit and play. But yeah, hopefully after Raging Justice and after some updates and some extra work that I'm obviously going to have to do to keep supporting it. But after all that, I'll get to play some games again, I hope.
Eternal Rage in chat. What's it like to choose which game you want to play?
What's it like for me to choose game? Oh, that's part of the problem. It's like nowadays it's almost as bad as having Netflix, which is the best thing ever when it comes to watching TV, but it's the worst thing ever because you have so much choice. Having Steam, where over the years I've bought too many games and I've got a huge Steam library full of shame games that I've not even booted up, never mind played. I've got PlayStation Plus, which gives me too many games every bloody month. I've got Xbox with games with gold, and that's got too many games. Too many games. Too much choice.
Oh, and State of Decay's out this month on Game Pass, if you have Game Pass.
That's another thing. I've been telling myself I'm going to give Game Pass a go, and I'm thinking, what am I doing? I've got too many games. But there's so much. I mean, it's such good value.
There's over 100 games in there.
I know. It's just so many. I love and hate the modern gaming age, especially because there's just, it's not they're all crap. They're all good. There's too many good games.
This is the way I rationalize getting Game Pass. I was either going to get Game Pass or I was going to get Sea of Thieves. Sea of Thieves was $60. So I took that $60 and I bought a couple of months of Game Pass instead.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably what most people have done, I think, with Sea of Thieves.
State of Decay's coming out. That's going to be $40. There's $40 to put towards more Game Pass.
Mm. I mean, I'm the one I'm looking forward to most is Crackdown.
Oh, God, yes. I can't wait.
That's going to be Game Pass. I mean, how? Why? But I don't care. It's Crackdown. You know, Crackdown's one of those games that when the first one came out, I was in awe of that game. I mean, it was a game that I played through a couple of times while it was in dev because I was working at Microsoft at the time. But even when it launched, it's like straight my 360 and I played through it a third time. It's just an awesome game.
Wow. So you were working there when that came out?
I was working. I wasn't working at, real time or anywhere like that. I was working at Rare. We were owned by Microsoft Game Studios. And through that, I got in touch with the guys who were testing Crackdown and just got a testing build and had a play through that and gave them some feedback. And, you know, when I found a bug or anything like that. And yeah, I played through it a couple of times, and then yeah, when it launched, I went out and bought it and played through again. I'm one orb away. That was where I got. I had one orb left to find, and I couldn't find it.
Oh, that is the worst.
I even went through an online guide, and every single one of these was 200 orbs, and I think I went through everything. I obviously missed one because I couldn't find it.
Oh man, that is brutal when games like that don't have some way to unlock the map and show where what you're missing is.
But ultimately, I spent far too many hours playing it, and I enjoyed every moment of it. I mean, it's just, it was one of those games that was awesome for its time. You know, I'd probably quite happily go back and play the original Crackdown again if I had time to spend playing it a fourth time.
See, you've had time at Rare. You've been close with Microsoft. You could definitely get Battletoads game going on.
I should see if I've got any contacts, shouldn't I, really?
There you go. Give them a poke and be like, hey, I made Raging Justice. You know you want Battletoads in there. I can make Raging Justice 2 Battletoad Edition.
Yeah.
Raging Justice
versus
Toad.
Raging Justice.
Raging Just Toad.
Yes.
Nick, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about with the game that I neglected to mention?
Which game's that?
Any of them.
No, I think, yeah. No, I'm cool. I'm cool.
Well, I know it's been a fun hour that we have been chatting. Give everybody all the information on where they can keep in touch with you. Give us the info about when the game is coming out, how much it's going to be, where they can get it. Give us all the plugs.
Okay, then, Raging Justice. It's coming out in 2 days' time. That's May the 8th. It's going to be £10 or £9.99, $14.99, depending on, you know, which part of the world you are and how you pay, and equivalents around the world. It's going to be out on every modern gen device. It's going to be on Steam with PC and Mac. It's going to be on Xbox One. It's going to be on PlayStation 4. It's going to be on Nintendo Switch. All on the same day, all at the same prices, and I believe we're doing a 10% discount for the first few days.
Nice.
Keep in touch through Twitter, at makinggames.com, or Facebook, or just makinggames.com. Sorry. Yeah, at makinggames. That's us. God, I'm not very good at the whole marketing side of thing, am I?
I'll be sure to include links in the show write-up.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we did is we went with a publisher last year. We went with a publisher called Team 17 because they're an awesome publisher. They've been around for like 25 years or so, and they have the know-how. They know how to do these kind of pitches, these kind of marketing of games, whereas I'm a developer. I know how to develop a game. The other side of it's kind of foreign to me and something I'm learning, and it's something that I'm kind of getting used to talking on podcasts like with yourself. But yeah, it's all new and exciting for me this time.
Well, I'm glad to have been practice for when you do actual important interviews.
No, this is every interview is important.
Don't lie.
You're
at the bottom of the barrel right now. You're working your way up. Oh, Nick, it has been fantastic talking to you on the show. Come back anytime. You're an absolute blast to chat with.
Thank you very much. No, it's been wonderful.
That is it for this part of the show. Everybody else, stick around. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more. Nick, do you have any final words to end this?
Buy my game.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to Nick for coming by and chatting about Raging Justice. But we have more show to take care of, and we're starting things off with not just Purnell and not just Cole, but both of you together.
Yay! Wait. It's not just us, but it's us.
Yes. The royal we.
Ah.
There are three of us here right now.
I can appreciate tricones.
But there's a good reason that there's three of us here, because the three of us together are going to talk about the first game that we're talking about tonight.
Voltron? We form Voltron.
Indeed. No, that's Captain Planet with the rings. I was going to say, do we put our rings together?
They're secret Dakota rings.
Pretty much, yeah.
Really? Yeah.
First game to talk about tonight is called City of Brass, developed and published by Uppercut Games. It released May 4th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. Become a daring thief in City of Brass, a punishing first-person roguelite filled with treasure, traps, and ghoulish foes. Armed with a scimitar and a versatile whip, you'll lash and slash, bait and trap your way to the heart of an opulent Arabian Nights-themed metropolis, or face certain death as time runs out. Who wants to start with this one?
You nominated you.
Me? I did the intro.
Good point. Cole, then.
Cole.
I did the interview.
But does it count? Fine. I'll start it out.
Purnell, tell us about City of Brass.
So, basically, this game, it's a pretty interesting one, honestly. So, it's a roguelike sort of timed game. Well, I guess that's what roguelikes typically have also, but it's a timed first person, I'd call it Arabian Nights Dungeon Crawler. The idea is that you are dumped into a set of stages. Each stage has a static theme, but the layout changes. And you are forced to progress from beginning to end of each section. You start out using a scimitar, which is good for typical hack and slash action. And the whip, which I think is especially kind of nifty, because what the whip does is allows you to whack guys, and you can stun them sometimes if you hit them in the right place. You can trip them with it, which is really cool. You can pull guys in, and you can smack them back. It's a very versatile product. And it even allows you to grab certain hooks or chassis and kind of propel yourself through the air. I was kind of having a good bit of fun with that because there's certain sections where you have to kind of like swing from one and you have to time it to grab another one and kind of keep going on a sequence of hooks. It's challenging, but once you adapt to it, it's kind of fun. There are traps thrown about in certain levels, like needles and like jet sprays and like blades. And the idea behind those is the obvious concept of if you get caught in one, you will get eviscerated or maimed or whatever you want to use to describe your murderous fate.
You will get your shit wrecked.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But you can also utilize things like your whip to apply these traps to your foes. So you can kind of get a little clever and shysterous and trap enemies in the ways that they expect to trap you. But if you're not fast enough to complete a zone, you will succumb to whatever the fuck that is. That it's like a freaking colorful orb that just chases you around and it burns. First time I came across it, I didn't even know what was going on. I thought it was just like a random enemy on the map. Because I thought I thought the time was based around the time shifting from day to night. Because it has day and night cycles in this game. But lo and behold, the hourglass depleted. It's like tick, tick, tick. I'm like, oh, I guess nightfall's coming. And then like freaking like death waves are following me. And they wreck your face. Like they are not to be fucked with.
Once again, your shit gets wrecked.
There's a lot of shit wrecking that takes place in this game. It's designed to wreck your shit.
You can avoid that particular form of shit wrecking if you want to play in Super Pussy Crybaby mode. There are blessings and burdens that can modify your game. You have to unlock the burdens by progressing through the game. But the blessings are all available from the start to make it as easy as you can fucking handle. So you can actually get rid of that timer. And you can make it to where there's less enemies and all kinds of other nifty little modifications to make it, you know,
less traps, more life, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, to make it noob friendly.
And you'll still get your shit wrecked.
Yeah.
And the sad part for me, like, it depends on the player, because some players are like, give me all the benefits I can handle. And for what I can tell, the game doesn't penalize you really from utilizing as many of the benefits as you could possibly want. Like, you can just like slam them all down and mm-hmm. you can just play the game. But for someone like me, who like beats his head in with hard modes intentionally, is like, I see those options. I'm like, I can't do that. I can't turn the timer off. That's the game. So
I sit here
and I lament over not having time to collect every drop of treasure and searching out every nook and cranny, yet I won't use the option to turn it off. So that's not even a flaw with the game. That's a flaw of my own flawed psyche.
User error.
But I honestly do like that component of the game. I like the fact that it's designed in a way that lets you tailor the experience to your own vices. And as you play different levels in the game and try and fail, you basically level up your character. And by leveling up your character, you unlock different treasures and items you can find in different treasure chests strewn throughout the levels. And also, what we didn't touch on yet is that there are genies that pop up in different areas in the game. And there are multiple types of genies, and each type of genie sells different types of currency. So it's an interesting dynamic that this game has. You inhabit a city whose known trait is that it's strewn with money. Like, money is no object here. And yet you don't have time, unless you use the benefits, you don't have time to actually collect all the treasure that is strewn about. And you need the genies and you need the money to pay the genies for the benefits that will make your journey safer. So you're basically constantly dancing between being, you know, meticulous with searching for money to buy genie benefits and being fast enough to blitz through levels before you get your shit wrecked. But the genies themselves are pretty cool because some of the equipment you find is often like a flame whip. There's like different abilities you can get. You can summon support units to actually run around and fight for you. There's some cool stuff that you can get. And every time
you can disable all the traps.
Yes, it's like 500. That's a good one. Shut down. And every time you do any of these things, whether it's get a new item, you know, activate a genie power, find a genie, or beat the tar out of a monster, the game tracks all of it in a nice nifty journal. So if you're not fluent in different things in the game, he can proceed to just kind of review the journal and see what different things does and whatnot. And worth mentioning also is that they also give you something called wishes. They're a limited currency. And what they allow you, I don't know if they do anything besides this. I don't remember. But I know that what you can do is if you go to a shop and they sell stuff you don't want, you can use a wish to change the entire inventory of the store. And I think sometimes it actually upgrades the inventory to better stuff.
Oh, it always does. And it does stuff like if you do the health genie, instead of buying one health point, it pretty much refills you. You could use wishes on the evil genies to turn them onto your side. Stuff like that.
There's a lot. There's a lot of cool options of customization and just fun gameplay in this thing. This is another case of game where the review came up. I saw the trailer and I thought this could be okay, I guess, whatever, you know, let's see what it's like. And it became kind of addictive. I wanted to do the best I could, which isn't much, but I tried. it's a good game. Like, I think this is a nifty product.
Cole, what are your thoughts on the game?
If I have to play devil's advocate, then there's one thing I'm going to fuss about, is that the game is procedurally generated, which isn't a complaint, but sometimes it's obvious in the layout of, you know, when you walk into an area and there are doors at awkward angles with awkward traps that, you know, move back and forth but have nowhere to go because it's such a narrow area. And then you're just stuck and you can't progress. That's really my only kind of complaint as far as the game goes. I had a blast with it. It's just that sometimes the whole procedural generation thing works against it.
Yeah.
As much as it works for it. Like, you're never bored. Every time you run it, it's different. But it can be frustrating when you're walking around and there is an indicator that tries to point you in the general direction of the exit, and you have to get from the start to the exit to work your way into the center of the city. So obviously if you're trying to follow that indicator, you could just find yourself staring at a wall, oblivious to the fact that, you know, there's a teeny tiny little narrow passageway blocked by some kind of random foliage that's hiding, you know, a door with a trap on either side of it. And you're just like, okay.
Well, that has happened with Cole.
It's just one of those things where it becomes obvious that it's procedurally generated rather than feeling like it flows naturally from level, you know, from room to room through each level. But it's really kind of one of just those like minor complaints. It's something you get oddly accustomed to with the game. And it's one of the reasons why I was just like, oh, look, I can disable all the traps everywhere. Boom, I'm done. And then I didn't have to worry about if there was a random ass door somewhere.
Disable traps.
I think my favorite part of the game is, you mentioned before how it is always fun every time you play it. And just the addiction of this game where it's always one more run. I made it further this time. Let's see how far I could get next time. Mm-hmm. And it just keeps you playing and gives you reasons to keep playing.
And even if you don't get to that last thing, it's like, it'll be like, hey, well, even if it's not a matter of like one more run for the sake of seeing how far I can get to, like, well, I'm this close to ranking up, and I rank up and I get to see what new thing I unlock. It's just, it's a quality game. It's quality stuff. And the price is right too.
Well, that leads us to $20 for verdicts. Pernell, let's start with you. What is your verdict?
I think it's a buy. Pick it up today. Bye. A late Arabian buys.
Cole, what about you? $20, your verdict?
Definitely a buy it.
Well, it is unanimous then, because I agree. $20, this is a definite buy it. I loved it.
Get the snatching it up.
Indeed. Next game to talk about is called Aquamoto Racing Utopia, developed and published by Zordix. It released May 4th on Xbox One, on sale at a discounted price of $9.99 through May 19th. Normal price is $19.99. Aquamoto Racing Utopia lets you race through both big and small waves and make death-defying stunts to get that much-needed boost that lets you pass your friends on the final stretch. A fun-packed racer with interactive waves, split-screen, and online racing. Cole, what did you think of this one?
Oh. So these kind of racing games are not particularly my favorite. And I'm going to just throw that out there from the jump. I didn't hate it. I'm not trying to imply that at all. It's just that it kind of had an uphill climb with me, and I think I was a little more critical of it than I would have been if I was like, oh, I love these games. It looks good for the most part. The character models are a little on the fugly side. Not as bad as we've seen in some others.
Very true.
But still not as good as I could have been. The actual, what's the proper term for them when you're not supposed to say jet ski, because that's trademarked or whatever?
Wave racer or wave runner?
Is that it?
Maybe.
I think it is wave runner. Whatever. We're going to call them jet skis.
A water vroom vroom.
Or jet ski. So, jet ski trademark?
Yeah. I believe it's Yamaha owns that trademark.
Holy crap. I never knew that.
So it's like the Kleenex and the Jell-O of the water vroom vroom vehicle.
The water vroom vroom.
Basically, water bike. Your goal here is basically just to race your jet ski and win. And if you win, you get monies. And if you do stunts while you're winning, you get even more money. And then you use that money to buy more jet skis to go faster and do it again. It's pretty basic. It's a jet ski racing game. It does have one extra little element to it, in that you have to race around buoys, and you need to go, you know, yellow buoys need you to go around the left side, red buoys need you to go around the right side. If you miss the buoys while you're going around the track, you can fuck up 3 times, and then you're disqualified from the race, and you got to start all over again. Which is, it's a lot easier to fuck up than you think it'd be.
It really is. And the waves, the whole interactive waves. I was impressed with the water physics in this game, in both a good way and a bad way. The good way, because it throws you around like water, like you're actually riding waves. It, you know, knocks your watercraft around, and it, you know, makes races tougher to do. And it's bad because I just want to drive in a straight line and I can't.
it does not matter what you're doing, you're gonna get flung all over the track,
because that's just what happens when you're on water and when waves are throwing you around. That's just how it is. So that's not a knock at the game, it's just a knock at my skill.
it's one of those, you know, it's great from a physics standpoint. From a gameplay standpoint, it makes shit a lot harder.
Yeah.
And whether that's great or not is up to whether you're good at these games or not, and take a stab at which one I am.
It's an interesting concept, too, because, like, you think about it, like, I know back in the day, Wave Race 64, which is, like, probably, like, the only other, like, water jet ski racing game I can think of that's not Jet Moto, is that game had a similar mechanic as far as using, like, the water buoys. I just kind of assumed it was because, due to the nature of the style of game it is, that if those water buoys weren't there, it would be too freeform. Like, you just have this huge pool of water. It's like, just cut around however you want. Just get around the course.
Yeah.
Like, you actually can play leisure mode on this and just go wherever the fuck you want without the buoys. They
have leisure mode, too. So is it like, is it still racing, but just without the need for wrapping around those loops? Or?
Nope. You can do a custom race if you want to without the buoys and stuff, but leisure mode is just you on the map, go where you want to go. It's really handy. Yeah, it's really handy because a lot of the races have shortcuts, and the fucking bully AI will let you know that they know where the shortcuts are. So.
Man, the AI in this game, they are mean. They will knock you around. They will run you off the path. They will drive you into buildings or into barricades. The AI in this game are dicks.
They are super bullies. I mean, they will come flying right over your head and knock you off of your craft. And there's not anything you can do about it.
Yeah, they're real sons of bitches. Pernell, did you say that you played this game before?
I did, in fact, play this game before.
What did you think of it?
I honestly liked it a lot. It was keep in mind, like I mentioned earlier, aside from like Jet Moto and Wave Race 64 and Wave Race Blue Storm, I can't think of too many other jet ski racing titles that were put out on consoles. So you take that and you factor in the fact that for the price that it was when I bought it, you get a pretty meaty racing game that is equivalent to how those games were. The character models, even when you think about it, unfortunately, obviously, we've come a long way since the N64 and PlayStation 1, but even then, the character models even are pretty much on par for that, too. But when you just factor down to the raw gameplay aspect of it, it's actually pretty solid. You are pretty much getting into your wave racer. You get to deal with the speed, you know, trying to maintain your speed, battling the water currents. There's a lot of different levels, and the levels themselves, if I remember correctly, actually have difficulty levels to them, which affects like how the water how the water behaves and stuff like that. So there is as far as like just the pure racing element goes, there's a fair bit there. There just wasn't a lot. Unfortunately, there wasn't a great deal of stuff like bonusy stuff. Like you can't like unlock characters or nothing, but you can unlock like additional bikes with the money you earn, which is not bad. That's a good thing. So, all in all,
But you mentioned how many different levels and stuff there were. There's actually 45 tracks over 10 different locations.
That is a lot.
Yeah, it really is an insane amount. And then to top it off, you have the championship mode, but you also have time trial and freestyle and the leisure mode and then custom races and the online. There's a lot of replayability there.
Wait, there's freestyle so you can actually rap?
Yeah, boy.
Welcome to Jet Moto, motherfucker!
One more time for the base.
Y'all ready to get watery?
Cole, you played Devil's Advocate last time. I'm going to play it this time. I really did enjoy this game, but I will say there's one game out there that when you compare the two, this one does kind of come up short, and that is Riptide GP Renegade 2.
I'm not even going to lie. My daughter, my oldest one, she's a huge fan of Riptide. Up plays it on her phone and everything. And then she saw this and she's like, oh, another, water racing game. And then she was like, oh.
Who's like, Riptide on?
This is the first, it's on everything. Xbox, yeah. PlayStation, Switch. Wait, is it on? I don't know if it's on Switch. It might not be on Switch yet. I don't remember.
Not on Switch, I'm surprised because my kid plays it on her phone.
So. Yeah, it's on mobile. I really did enjoy Aquamoto Racing, but when you compare it to Riptide GP, it really is no contest. And that's because Riptide is in our Hall of Fame. That I know CJ called it like as close to a perfect game as he could think of for what it is. And I definitely agree. Riptide is amazing. Even still, $10 on Aquamoto Racing. I think if you're picking it up while it's on sale, $10 is an absolute no brainer for this one. When it goes back up to 20, I would give it more of a general try it rating, but at $10 through May 19th, I would say buy it.
Yeah, I'm going with the try it for the full price. At $10, it's a lot easier to be like, oh yeah, just go ahead and pick it up. If for nothing else, then because it's pretty easy, achievements if you're looking to rake in a few gamer score. It's just not my favorite type of game, and the whole water physics, as awesome as they were, just made it so fucking difficult that I was just aggravated because it's me.
To be fair, Riptide's water physics could fuck you over a lot too. So it's just water physics in general.
In general. But that was really just my biggest complaint. I do want to say, we always put anything with online to my weird online play schedule test. And 7:30 this morning, man. 7:30 in the morning, I loaded this motherfucker up, and I found people to play with.
Are you serious?
And it was instant. Yeah. I was so impressed, because usually 7:30 a.m. No. But yeah, I did. I found people to play with.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I'm guessing that $10 price tag's helping a lot.
There were definitely people. I would say if this is one of those that I wouldn't be surprised to see hit Game Pass, because it would benefit as far as the online goes. Because like I said, I did find people at an unusual hour, but it was like 3. So
hey, that's more than I would expect at 7:30 in the morning.
I have to agree with that wholeheartedly.
But I think if this game was to hit Game Pass or something, it would fare better in that regard. But the price is certainly not hurting at its current $10 state.
So again, through May 19th, it is $10. So while it is on sale, I definitely recommend you pick it up. Otherwise, you know, it's a try. It's still an enjoyable game. It's a lot of fun. But man, Riptide GP is just so goddamn good. And I hate comparing games to other games, but, you know, same genre, you kind of have to apples to apples on that one.
Yep.
Anyway,
another game.
That is a good game. I miss that game.
What is a good game?
Apples to Apples.
Oh, my kids have it, I think.
Do they have the normal version or the kids version?
Probably the kids version. Yeah. Here's the thing. I don't buy a lot of board games just for the fact that we live in a tiny house and we have a lot of pets and shit goes missing and then I get pissed off kids who have shit missing. And so if they have board games, the few that they have, like, other people gave them for birthdays and holidays and shit, and I'm just like, it's only a matter of time till those pieces go missing.
You're just waiting.
Just like, I randomly find a sorry peg somewhere in the kitchen. I'm like, I fucking knew it. That's why we don't play this.
Fucking children and shit.
You little bastards. Why are you losing everything? Man. Anyway, we got one more game to talk about, and that is called Max, The Curse of Brotherhood, developed by Flashbulb Games and Stage Clear Studios, published by Stage Clear Studios and Wired Productions. It released April 26th on the Switch for $14.99 digital. There will be a physical edition as well for $29.99. Armed with only a magic marker, Max must confront evil at every turn in a hostile and fantastical world in order to save his kid brother, Felix. Fortunately, the magic marker has the power to bend the elements and create magic objects that help Max on his quest. Join Max on the greatest adventure of his life. Pernell, tell us about this one.
Greatest adventure of his very short life. Because you're going to die a lot. You're going to die a lot. And it's not going to be pretty. This game is well animated, I got to say. It feels like you're playing a cartoon. And that makes it a little bit rougher whenever you take a death. Because there's some brutal deaths that happen in this game. The idea is that Max is a kid who comes home from school one day. His kid brother's being a complete turd, because that's what kid brothers do. Except for me, I was the best kid brother. And the result of the incident that occurred of him being frustrated, he goes on the internet and types in a search into how to get rid of your younger brother, finds an incantation, says it, and a demon takes his brother away. Because that's how the internet works. So he jumps in behind him and he gives chase. And this begins a fantastical adventure where Max himself is just a fleet-footed young boy who can't beat the crap out of anything. He is pretty weak. So what that means, unfortunately, is that this harsh environment would be the death of him. And it will be, as goblins try to crush him and giant goblins try to eat him. And the elements themselves just try to bend him and crush him at any turn. But he comes across a nice old lady who possesses a marker. And this marker allows you to do some interesting environment manipulations to make for some pretty cool environmental puzzles. So all the levels in the game are fairly themed based around the elements of sort of, you know, the general, you know, water stage, or the water-esque stage. There's the, you know, the desert stage, the forest stage, what have you. In each of those environments, the marker requires an upgrade, which will allow it to bend a different type of element. And what do I mean when I say bend an element? Well, to get this out the way immediately, don't think that being that the Switch has a touchscreen and that your item is a marker that you can just doodle all over the damn screen and make things happen. This isn't Scribblenauts. But what it does do is different zones will have different, let's say, for example, you're running across a platform, and on the ledge to your right, you'll see like a sort of brown light flashing from the ground. If you hold down the button and move the marker to it, you can actually manipulate that spot to make a stone pillar rise out of the ground, which ultimately results in a pillar that Max can ride up or use to block objects or use to elevate objects. A variety of things can be done with this simple mechanic. And you'll end up faced with a variety of environmental centerpieces where they will have a variety of different elements that you can bend, such as, say, for example, maybe one of my favorite types of puzzles has been where you have the second world, you get the power to bend vines. You can extract vines and wrap vines and what have you. So you'll see a pit. You can pull a vine out, cut the vine so that it falls down, and then raise the ground up to make the vine form a bridge. And you can jump on the vine and run across before the vine falls off the side and sinks into a pit. So there's a lot of weird puzzles like that. And I think that's partly where I think that's where most of the game shines. It's not early on. It's still fun. But as you start getting more powers, the game will have environments where they combine the different properties and traits of the powers, and you have to utilize them all in some way in order to progress. It's not an easy game. Like, it's not, don't get me wrong, it's not the type of game where you're going to break something unless you just really suck at puzzle games. But if you are the type of person that can handle sitting for a couple minutes and just saying, how do I traverse this environment? I should think about it. If you're the person to handle that, you should have no overall problems with this game. You'll just have to actually, puzzle through environments, which, let's be blunt, if you're buying a puzzle platformer, you should want to puzzle through shit. That's just how it works. So this game does a great job of it. Collectible-wise, I don't 100% even know what they overall will do, but you can collect amulet pieces, and you can collect eyeball rips. So it's kind of funny how this works. The villain of the game that kidnapped your brother has literal eyes all over the world, which is how he's able to monitor what you're doing and send enemies after you. But you can find the eyes and actually rip them out, which is pretty freaking morbid when you think about it. But you rip the eyes out of their holding places, and you potentially blind the villain. And every time you get a certain number of them, there's actually a mini cinematic where he's like, "Oh God, my eyes!"
Oh Lord,
it's kind of cool. But I like the characterization. I like the fact that it feels like a Saturday morning cartoon or CBS story break element to like an adventure. Like, you remember the old Dungeons and Dragons cartoon where there was actual kids who were dropped in the fantasy realm. They were acting like kids in a fantasy location. It feels kind of like that. Just that Max isn't a druid or a paladin. He's just some kid with a shirt and a backpack. But it's an enjoyable game. The atmosphere is done well. The environments are very colorful and like pretty to look at. And I genuinely didn't feel a sense of boredom. I like the fact that more elements open up, and I like the fact that it becomes more intrinsic on how you have to combine elements to solve puzzles. Just, again, don't go on expecting to have this free-form scribble-knot sort of aesthetic to puzzle solving with a magic marker, because you're not getting that, but you are getting a quality product nonetheless.
Nice. So $15 on this one, what do you think?
I think it's worth $15. It's a full-on product with some quality puzzle platform elements, which I gotta say, is it just me, or does it feel like there's been like an interesting revival of the puzzle platformer over the last few months?
Well, the funny thing with this one is, like, it's still weird to see this on other platforms. This was an Xbox One launch title, and it was a first party Xbox One launch title, because it was originally released by Press Play, who were owned by Microsoft. And when they shut down the studio, I guess the studio retained the rights to the game. So then it released on PlayStation. Now it's out on Nintendo. And it's still weird to see this game that was an Xbox One first party launch title showing up on other systems. It's still just weird to me.
I gotta admit, though, given the circumstances you just described, I'm kind of happy it does. Because the reason that they left is because their studio got shut down. And it's a good thing that they're able to still sell this product and hopefully turn a profit.
Yeah, that's really cool that Microsoft let them keep the IP and let them do what they wanted with the game.
Oh, yeah. Like, and the fact that it's a quality game means that they're not just like selling fluff. It's a good game.
Indeed.
I have to laugh because you were talking about how you'll die a lot. And if I'm not mistaken, there's one achievement on Xbox. And I think it's the only one I don't have for the game for beating it with no deaths.
How many deaths?
Zero. None. Dip, zilch, nada. You can't die.
Did you play through it twice or something? Or you just was like, fuck it, I'm just that damn good?
No. I don't have that one. That's like the only achievement I don't have in the game. Because I can't do anything. As soon as a game has an achievement that says zero deaths or a speed run, I'm like, yeah, I'm not getting a completion here.
I can say, depending on the style of game, I've had moments where I pulled off the zero deaths, but the moment they drop a clock in there, they can kiss my ass. It's like, okay, I enjoy it. Like, I mean, there are games to this day where it's like, they're quality games. If you were to ask me, oh, what do you think of the game? I'm like, well, the fact that they slapped the clock on there in a way that it penalizes you for not succeeding,
like, it hurts it. Like, we just talked about City of Brass and how there's a timer and whatnot. That's different. The game is literally built to not allow you to be meticulous with your searching in the environment. It's an okay feature. It's games like, I guess it's like, well, I'm not going to go and look at the name of a game, but it's a game where it'll outright tell you, well, here's your world for you, and everything's awesome. But then it's like, you know, what you really want to do, though, is get through it in 10 minutes. It takes 2 hours. Well, yeah, just forget the game's even there and just blitz the fucker. Like, why would I do that? I want to play your game. I don't want to blitz it. Why?
I hate speedrun achievements. The moment there's a speedrun achievement, I'm like, yeah, that's not ever getting done. Sorry. I have five or six games on my hard drive that the only achievement I don't have is either a speedrun or no deaths. I'm just like, okay,
Little Nightmares. They keep making achievements like that. I hate that.
Yep, Little Nightmares has a speedrun, no death achievement. Never going to get it, and I'm okay with that. Broken Age has a speedrun. Nope.
I can drill down, I think back. The only thing I can think of, though I'm sure there's going to be someone listening who's like, fuck you, Purnell, is that maybe they're tailored around people who are like in their teens that get like one game and they got to just expand on what they can do with it because they can't afford another game. Because when I was a kid, I did play games like 10 times. I beat Resident Evil 2 in 1 hour, you know, crazy shit like that. And that takes a lot of repetition, like doing it over and over again, drawing maps. I beat an RPG. It was like a contest I entered as a kid where the first time it took me 12 hours to beat it. The second time I beat it in an hour, well, not the second time, but my final time was an hour and 58 minutes.
Holy like, shit.
But I was trying to win $10,000. And Working Design said, fuck you, buddy. But ultimately, that kind of thing, I only could do it because I didn't have a ton of games back then. I had a wealth of free time back then. So it was like free time plus few games plus not going out to the bars and drinking with the rest of my 16-year-old friends. It's like, well, I guess I'll sit here and just run the same game over and over again to get a better time. But now I got time for that shit. I want to play new games. I want to experience my games and then move on and feel the joy of partaking of new experiences. Not the same one flicker. It's like, I can't do it. Can't do it. Ugh.
Oh, man.
But well, Max is good. About Max. I like Max.
Well, it's good to hear that Max is good, but that is it for you two. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. That's it.
My death block up? What do you mean it's it for me?
That's it. You're dead.
I've got so much more living to do.
Well, you don't have any time. So, Purnell, do you have any final words before your mortal life ends for good?
Tell my wife and kids they don't exist.
All right, next game to talk about is called Earthlock, developed and published by Snowcastle Games, released March 8th on the Switch, March 20th on the PS4, April 11th on Xbox One, all for $29.99. Desert scavenger Amon soon finds himself in life's adventure when he crosses paths with a most peculiar creature back home in Zabir, or Zaber, or one of those. words in RPGs. Join Amon and other remarkable heroes in this turn-based fantasy RPG on an unforgettable journey across the worlds of Umbra, a mysterious, beautiful, but harsh planet that stopped spinning thousands of cycles ago. Checking this one out, good friend Len Stewart. Len, how are you doing?
Hey, doing good, Joe.
How are things going?
Things are going good. I had a really fun time playing this game. I've been working on Pixel Noir. I've been working for freelance pay. And here I am today talking with you about Earthlock.
So how is Earthlock?
Earthlock's pretty cool. The story kind of failed to like pull me in a little bit more than I was thinking it would. And the translation, like, because it's in Norwegian game, was a little rough.
Did but I get any of the names right?
Zabir is good, and Amon is good. You're good.
Cool.
Yeah. I kind of like to say that it's like a cross between Final Fantasy and having that nostalgic cross. The battle mechanics being like turn-based and Torchlight in the way like the artwork is kind of that sub like you know cartoonish but like really like light colors of everything in the artwork.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. I liked it. I mean I liked it overall. Even if the story didn't really pull me in, I liked the mechanics of the game probably the best. That was kind of like the redeeming factor for me in this game, you know?
So what about the story didn't pull you in?
I don't know. It felt like it was typical, like, tropey RPG stuff. Like, oh, you know, we find these random characters and then they're going to save the world, you know? That kind of thing.
Mm.
And I don't know. It kind of goes with, like, every other RPG out there, you know? And the fact that I had the read everything a few times since the translation was kind of bad kind of also sucked me out of the story, you know?
Yeah. So how about the gameplay? What about the gameplay redeemed it for you?
I really like the battle mechanics. You could say that you're playing as Amon, who's like a thief slash scavenger guy, and he's like he goes around and collects like materials for different things that he's trying to scat to sell to just live from day to day. Mm-hmm. But in the battle, you can switch between him being like a thief guy and a guy who can use his like blaster to like blast enemies. Mm-hmm. And In being able to switch between different things that he does and all the other characters do allows for a lot more of a, like, a strategic thinking in the way that you can take on each battle. It's, like, super interesting, you know? Like, guys you meet along the way, there's a guy who's, like, a healer kind of guy. He's, like, a cleric, and he heals, and he can just, like, knock people out with his hammer, and I thought that was kind of cool.
Beating people down with a hammer is usually pretty cool.
Yeah. another thing that was pretty cool is that you can actually form bonds between characters. So Amon and the guy who uses his hammer, if you gather enough bond throughout the game, you can use these special abilities on all characters rather than just one character. Mm-hmm. So like the cleric guy with the hammer, you can just be like, hey, I'm going to use the bond thing to heal my entire party with the regen ability rather than just regularly just use it. Or with Amon, you can use his gun, his blaster, to blast all the enemies multiple times. So it's kind of like a limit break in a way, you know?
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Another thing I really liked about battle was there was different ways that you could like bonus experience by like either not dying or you know killing all your enemies real fast or whatever. The one thing I didn't like about like battle was your level. Your level caps at level 20, so like you get like halfway through the game and you can't level anymore. So you can't, like, gather more strength to, like, kick everybody's ass, like, later in the game, which makes, like, the rest of the gameplay super, super difficult. I felt like if they would have, like, raised the cap, like, 10 levels, like, at least level 30, I felt like I could have gotten to, like, the very end of the game. But that didn't really happen. I got stuck, like, a little bit toward the end. And,
It's kind of weird that they cap it so low. I'm never a fan of games that have a level cap that you can hit way before you finish the game.
Yeah, and not only that, but, like, it's not just, an experience thing, but it's also, you get these things called talent points, and they are, you get one for every level you gain, and you stop getting those at level 20, so you can never, like, make your party stronger after level 20. You just can't do it. Yeah.
That's kind of a bummer to hear, because otherwise it sounds like a really, really cool game, story aside, since the translation is a bit, you know, iffy in places.
Yeah, and I thought the dungeons were really cool, too. There was a lot of, like, puzzle-based solutions that you have to, like, come across. And also, like, the world map stuff. That's pretty cool too, since you can, like, trade off different characters and collect different things using specific characters. So, like, if you are Amon, you can only interact with, like, scrap piles on the map to, like, get different items and crafting materials. But if you play as Gnart, the healer with the hammer, you can collect, like flowers and stuff that give you extra speed bonuses on the map, so you can, like, run across the map faster, or you can collect, like, healing items and stuff like that for them. I thought that was pretty, like, inventive, you know, if anything.
So what all could you do with the crafting system?
The crafting system, well, let me backtrack just a little bit. Eventually, like, a little bit through the game, you get access to this island. It's called Pumpkin Island. And you then have, like, all your crafting stuff becomes available to you when you get that island. And the island also allows you to fast travel between dungeons and different towns and stuff like that. But the crafting's pretty cool because you can, like, grow a garden and with different, like, seeds that you get, like, along the way. And you can craft, like, potions or extra ammo for your blaster or extra ammo for different other people's, like, range weapons. It's pretty neat. You can also craft talents, which are, like, the skills in the game. So
I swear to God, I thought you said you could craft towns.
Oh, no, towns.
I was going to say, that is incredible that you could just build an entire town with a crafting bench.
Yeah, right. All you need is, like, a piece of wood and five rocks, you know, and you can have a whole village. and you can craft, like, weapons and stuff like that. Amon has, like, his own, like, crafting bench for, like, making weapons and stuff like that. And you can just keep, like, as you get more people in your party, the island becomes more and more useful as to, like, craft stuff or buy stuff or, like, scavenge for stuff. It's pretty neat. I kind of like that. It kind of felt, what's that game? Shit, now I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, it kind of feels like a Suikoden, so you kind of, like, have your own, place to go to, you know, either talk to people and, you know, form friendships or things like that, but you can also craft stuff. And I don't know, I just kind of like that.
Sounds pretty cool. So, summary, yeah. The game looks great, it plays really well, the story's a little bit on the fence. So, overall, $30 on this one, what do you think of it?
I think it's totally worth buying, absolutely. I do want to stress again that this is, like, a Norway game. It's Norwegian. And so when you go to, like, read everything in the game, I think that was the thing that kind of took away from the story for me. You know, the translation kind of busted it up, you know.
It's good to hear that the game is still worth picking up, though, at the price.
Absolutely. And you know what, too, is that the soundtrack is really good. Like, the orchestral soundtracking is, like, amazing in it, actually.
Nice. An RPG with good music just seems to be what you need in life.
Yeah, yeah. And the music didn't annoy me. Like, I know, like, with a lot of RPGs, like, it just feels like, oh, my God, if I hear this song again, I'm just going to kill myself, you know?
So I'm guessing it has a pretty good battle theme with it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Thank God.
The boss themes and the regular battle themes are excellent.
Those have got to be the hardest songs to get right in a game, because you hear the battle theme more than any other song, and if you don't nail it with that battle theme, or if there's something that's just a little bit annoying in there, it's going to ruin the game.
Yeah, yeah, really. And I actually really like that.
Someone breaks something at Starbucks.
They're changing the trash, I think. I think it's totally worth picking up. I really wanted to play this on Switch, actually, because you told me about it, you gave me the code for it, and then I was like, oh, I wonder if this is on Switch, and I was like, God damn it, it's on Switch. God.
Hey, Switch stuff is hard to get sometimes. Those codes are fairly limited.
Yeah, I hear you.
But
Len, it's totally worth picking up, but thanks.
It's good to hear that. It's awesome. I'm very happy to hear that. But Len, it is always good having you on chatting about RPGs. You have any final thoughts on the game to sum it up?
No, just I think if you are into turn-based RPGs, you should totally pick this one up. It kind of hits the nostalgia bone and the modern nostalgia bone all at the same time, so you're good.
Alright, moving on, next game to talk about is called Hyper Sentinel, developed by 456 Pixel, published by Huey Games, that released May 11th on Xbox One for $14.99, a face-melting, pixel-pumping arcade shoot-em-up featuring awesome power-ups, epic boss battles, and spectacular effects at a blistering 60 frames per second. Blast into battle against giant space destroyers in arcade mode, tackle endless waves of enemies in survival mode, and face off against epic level guardians in boss run mode. Checking this one out. Royal Sefton, how are you doing today?
My face is still melting.
Is it?
Yeah. It's hot down here anyway. It's like 100 degrees.
You're West Coast. They have a lot of plastic surgeons out that way, don't they?
Yeah, they got their work cut out for themselves with me, man.
I know the feeling. I'm ugly, too.
What's the polite thing to do? Laugh? Disagree? Or be like, yeah, I know.
Punch me in the throat, maybe? I don't know. But how is Hyper Sentinel?
Oh, dude, it's great. So real fast pace. My first console was an Atari 2600.
Cool, yeah, boy.
And then the other games that I like to play that weren't on the 2600 were on a Texas Instruments TI-99. And that had a cartridge system. I had a great game called Parsec. And Parsec was kind of like the Defender Killer. You know, Defender being the other one where you can fly in two different directions and wipe out aliens and shit. This brought back a lot of those memories, except the perspective is different. Instead of it being like side-scrolling, though it is, you're looking from a top-down vantage rather than you're looking from a side profile. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the a lot of the ideas are similar to me. Basically, you have to go on strafing runs back and forth to eliminate targets. Well, the top-down view in Hyper Sentinel, it's more like... God, I can't think of a good similar perspective, except maybe like Xevious or a lot of other ones, except it's side to side instead of up and down. And you're going back and forth over this giant battlecruiser type thing and knocking out turrets. Yeah, it is face melting. I mean, it's almost like sensory overload shit. If you're used to like, Jeff Minter type shooters, there's a lot of stuff going on screen, a lot of noise. This is definitely your cup of tea.
Cool. So what other kind of fun stuff is in this game? I dabbled with it a little bit. I kind of enjoyed the fact that if you went too far to the left or the right, it just kicked you back in the other direction. Like, hey, fight's over this way.
You stand up, trying to run away. That's right. So yeah, no, I as you go on, you get to unlock the additional levels and you pick up where you left off, of course, and there are different difficulty tiers. But I after about 2-3, I started getting my ass kicked, and I also started getting repetitive stress injury. Like, this is the first game in a while to give me Nintendo thumb. Yeah, which that's some, you know, fairly high praise, I gotta say. If you hold down the button to shoot, it's kind of pokey. And when I say hold down the button, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the Xbox controller has, what, I don't know, 11 buttons on it or something. Yeah, and it doesn't matter which one you hit, you're shooting. It's very simple, but you shoot as fast as you can hit practically. So, you know, I'm sitting there mashing, going back and forth on these strafing runs, and it started to kick my ass as you start to unlock these levels that have more than one boss. The idea being, you know, you got the ship, you clear out the ground turrets, you have to take care of the dogfights that are happening as they go back and forth over the ship against you, collect power-ups, etc. Once they reveal the guardian or guardians, as you get further into the game, you get more and more of them, or they start to become these more complex ones that'll have multiple parts to them, and you got to dismantle them basically one part at a time. That's kind of the thrust of the entire game, though. It doesn't have a whole lot of modes. It's very much single player, very, very simple design. Just no nonsense, no frills as far as that goes. The only thing I found that was really a mode is you could change the way the game looked, which was kind of interesting. They had the CRT mode, which kind of puts it in sort of a fisheye, like rounded glass.
The TVs of old.
yeah. You know. And then there's also a C64 mode, which is allegedly going to make it look more like a Commodore 64. And then you've got the Spectrum mode, which is supposed to look like a Spectrum ZX or something like that. I don't have any familiarity with the Spectrum firsthand, but it makes it... God, this is kind of harsh. Not necessarily unplayable, but really fucking hard to see what's going on. The ship just turns into this like blur of yellow and gray. And my understanding is there were some pretty severe graphical limitations of the Speccy that, you know, caused it to only display so many colors per line or something. So you basically it takes a lot of the color out of the game, makes it a lot harder to see what's going on. You lose a lot of detail. So I wasn't a fan of that. But the C64 and CRT modes look pretty good. The music it sounds just like straight up Sid chiptune. It's really, really solid. There are different schools of thought on chiptunes. I love that sort of sound, like the phasey square wave type stuff. Mm-hmm. That's my preference. So this game hits a lot of good buttons for me.
It does. Going back a bit to what you said with Nintendo thumb, this is one of those games where I went from the traditional two hands on a controller thing to left hand on the joystick, and then the right pointer finger moves to the fire button instead of the thumb. Yeah. Just in that position with the controller on the lap, you're not holding the controller up anymore. It's firmly planted on your lap, so you could just mash away at that fire button.
Yeah, that's about it, man. Because otherwise, you're just going to wear yourself out. This game is rough. I love it.
I know. It's great when you could say this game is rough. I love it. Instead of this game is rough, I feel so bad for the developer. Like, this game is rough. It's going to fuck you up, and I love it.
That's right.
So $15 on this one. What is your verdict?
So $15 is it seems kind of steep because of the gameplay is it's not real deep and the play modes aren't real deep, you know, it's basically arcade. So to me it's definitely a buy it if you're looking for an old school shooter, I think. If it goes on sale, then it becomes an insta buy. I feel like $15 is probably just a little north of the sweet spot as far as price.
What would your sweet spot be?
I would say $10 is worth it. $15 is going to be worth it if you're really looking for something that definitely satisfies that need for an old school shooter. It just seems a little higher than I would normally pay for it.
Makes sense. Yeah, awesome game though. But moving on, next game I'm going to do one quick is called Dungeon Stars, developed by Furnace Games, published by Riposte Games and Company, released April 26th on Steam Early Access for $14.99. Delve deep into hundreds of dungeon levels to liberate your fellow heroes, rescue pets, gather gold, pilfer potions, and discover magical loot. The goblin hordes will try to stop you, fearsome creatures will try to eat you. With grit and determination, you may create a team of amazing adventurers with enough guts and glory to defeat the conqueror worm. This is a cool little mashup of like an auto runner style game and a dungeon crawler. It is all done from a side scrolling perspective. There's a bunch of different control options on this because it's on Steam. I'm going to go off of the controller using an Xbox One controller on this just because I, you know, like controllers. But, you pretty much run from left to right through a bunch of different rooms. Rooms are filled with different monsters, and you either do your standard attacks or you could do a hold charged attack. Obviously, through the game, you'll earn special abilities as well. You take out all the monsters, get to the end of the floor, you hit a stairwell, and then you move on to the next floor. Dungeons could have, you know, the earlier ones have like 3 or 5 levels. Later ones are going to have, you know, a shitload more floors. And then you just go through, take out all the enemies, and get to the end and move on to the next dungeon. It feels, my one friend Ian was saying it felt a lot like a mobile game, but from what I could tell, it's not a mobile game. So I'm not sure if I'm missing something or if I don't know. It's a really fun game though. I had a lot of fun with it. My friend Ian didn't really enjoy it that much because he's not a fan of mobile-like games, but I thought this was a good mindless, just hack and slash kind of game. It could wear down your mouse if you go with the mouse control option where you're just clicking the whole time, but, even if you're just trying to grind and you go through some of the earlier dungeons and repeat them, you could basically just let it do an auto runner because it will auto attack. It just won't auto attack as quickly as you would like it to, if that makes sense.
So you kind of have autopilot, but you can jump in and you can start mashing
mashing away and taking everything
out. Yeah, okay.
And then obviously in between dungeons, you could, you know, level up your characters. You can equip different weapons and accessories and armor and all this other stuff. It's a fun time. I had a lot of fun with it. $15, I think, is a little bit steep on this one. This is another one where it would seem like a $10 price tag would go a lot further than $15, just because if you play it for a good while, it's going to get repetitive and it's going to feel pretty samey after a while. But I had a lot of fun just dropping in, playing for 10, 15 minutes, coming back later, playing for another 20 minutes, leaving, coming back, playing for another 15, 20 minutes. It really felt like a good pick up and play, do a couple of dungeon runs kind of thing, move on, rinse, repeat. But it's enjoyable. Cool. So $15 overall, I'm going to give it a solid try it rating. It's fun. It's not a must own by any means, but it's a good time killer and a good distraction from some of the other crazier, bigger games that are out there.
It's cool.
Indeed. And speaking of the crazier, bigger, more intense games, the next game to talk about is called Bounce Rescue. Developed. I might be exaggerating a bit with that description, but developed and published by ByteCore, released May 4th on Xbox One for $9.99. The evil devil has landed on Earth with the intention of taking over the world. He will not get away with it as easily as he thought, for he has to take on the skillful Bounce Rescue team who will do anything to protect the Earth. You can help the Bounce Rescue team to release the captives and save the Earth. Are you ready for the adventure? Royal, tell us about this one.
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
I feel like break this should be called like Angry Jelly Beans with Sticks or something. This game, okay, so you know, they get these marginally anthropomorphic jelly beans with cute eyes on them. And, you know, when I heard the term bounce rescue, I'm thinking, okay, so it's kind of Mario style. Got to jump on your enemies' heads. Yeah, that, okay, in some circumstances you can do that. But as you're showing the intro, and the devil shows up and zaps away all the buddies, and then these bad ones show up, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they get these sticks and start pulverizing these enemies. I'm like, oh, okay. So it's
some motherfuckers down.
Yeah, it's bounce and bat rescue or something. Okay, that's cool. I can dig it. Yeah, so this is a platformer that has a very cutesy look and feel to it. Kind of a simple, rather simple game, but that kind of belies the truth of what it is. When you actually go through the campaign, it is pretty punishingly hard. It's got a lot more challenge to it than it lets on. And so, you know, my kids were given it a field test and they liked it at first. And then I think they started to kind of want to bail on the game because they found it just a little too stinking hard. But, you know, there's a variety of play modes, which I think helps that. You know, they were getting frustrated with the single player or the not single player because they were doing two player. You can do a co-op game through the story mode or the campaign mode. That was starting to get a little difficult for them. So there's also a versus mode, which you can do up to a four player couch game with that. And, I kind of liked it, but we did run into some bugs, and so I didn't really get to test every single play mode. And there's a few of them. You know, I got to test one. I think it was called Survival, and the objective there was to simply get from one end of this quasi massacre gauntlet to the other. It's a single screen, but it's this winding path you've got to take to get to the other end. And as you go, you touch checkpoints, and each checkpoint goes toward your score, gives you a point. And you can die an apparently infinite number of times until you run out of time or you complete the entire course. So, you know, there's that. But there's also a deathmatch and capture the flag mode, which unfortunately I couldn't get to play. I don't know what happened, but whenever we try to start those up, we'd be kicked back to the beginning and asked to select which Xbox profile to use, and then it would take us back to the main menu. So
I know you mentioned that to me, and I did test them on my end, and I had no issues getting them up and running. I don't know if it was something that was patched and already taken care of, or if it's something dealing with multiple profiles being used. Not too sure what it is, but I didn't have any issues accessing them. Capture the flag is basically, you know, they have six different stages. You select one, you have to pick up the flag and hold it as long as you can. And once someone gets to 100 points, it's game over. And then they have the death match, which is basically, weapons are littered about, like shotguns or rocket launchers, or of course your trusty sticks. You just beat the shit out of each other, and the first person to X number of points wins. So yep. Fairly standard multiplayer modes.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of characters to unlock too. My kids liked what was available, but I think they probably wanted more, as all kids do. I think my daughter liked Log the most, or whatever her name was, like Mrs. Log or Miss Log. I couldn't really gender it or assume a gender on it. I mean, it was a log, but you know, cool. It was a cute game, and I think the thing about it being so cute is that it was deceptive, because I don't think they expected to be as much of an ass kicking time as they got.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It reminded me a bit of Little Triangle in that regard, but with Little Triangle, I felt like the multiplayer had so many different levels to choose from and so many different options that that part of the game felt a lot deeper. I believe that Bounce Rescue has a lot of the right ideas. Maybe could use a little more diversity as far as level choices or more characters unlocked from the word go. You know, that would be kind of cool. I know they want to reward you by playing through the campaign, but hey, at first glance, there just aren't very many choices there. So yeah,
could probably be a bit more forgiving with how you lose a lot of items when you die and get sent back to checkpoints.
Yes, that. They were getting super pissed off about that. They would try to grab those gems, and you know, B would come sting them or something. They'd go back to the last checkpoint. They'd lose everything they picked up on the way. That was pretty rough.
How many new curse words did your kids learn?
They've heard them all, unfortunately. No, no. They were pretty good mannered about the game. I got to give them credit. They handled it well. They took it like a champ.
Cool. So $10 on this one. What do you think? And what did your kids think?
I think they liked it. I think they, like me, they liked Little Triangle a little more. But at $10, I think that's probably a fair price. The campaign's pretty long. It's got boss fights that we didn't even get to. Oh, God, I can't remember how many stages. Was it 100 or something?
Something crazy. There's a lot of game there.
There is a lot of game there if you want to play the campaign mode. Like I said, the Versus could afford more options, I think, and be neat if they release some DLC later, or an update later that's free for purchasers to add more levels for that piece. But there is a lot of single player campaign there, and if you're looking for a fairly challenging platformer, you could do worse. You know, it's not a bad game.
Cool, sounds good. Royal, it's always fun having you on. It really is. You're a good guy.
Is it? Oh, thank you.
You know,
you don't care something. What anybody says. I'm all right.
Fuck them all. You're half decent in my book.
Well, thank you.
But that is it for those games. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap them up?
Copy that.
And no one's going to get that joke.
Probably not.
Oh, fuck. That's awesome. All right, next game to talk about is called Venture Kid, developed by Snikabo AS, published by FDG Entertainment, released May 3rd on Steam for $9.99. The evil Dr. Teklov is about to build a secret weapon disguised in his huge space fortress. Time is running out, but our hero Andy stepped up to defeat him and fight his way through Teklov's minions. Join Andy and prepare yourself for a dangerous journey that demands great skill and determination. Will you succeed? To answer that question, Chris Taylor, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. To answer the question whether you will succeed or not, I'm just going to say no.
You did not succeed?
I mean, it's not that the game's especially hard, it's just I don't believe in you.
So what is Venture Kid?
Venture Kid is a side-scrolling platformer very much in the vein of old NES classics. It'll definitely remind you of a certain Mega Man. The opening story you describe seems like it's part of it. I guess there's also like a girl involved who gets hospitalized by some kind of explosion that I don't know. The whole thing is done in this opening cinematic that contains very few words. But what I liked about it is that, like, this clearly young, like, kid, you know, I guess he's been through this thing. They were gathering orbs and in some place, and then the guy shows up and there's an explosion. Girl ends up in the hospital and the kid's there, and then in walks their clearly much older, like, approaching middle age friend or accomplice of some kind who's like, "Hey, Andy, I've been working on this and you should have it," and he hands you a gun.
Oh God.
And it's just really funny to me.
Here, kids, play with guns.
Yeah. So the game basically is a, you know, running, jumping and shooting and collecting power-ups, hearts and things like that. It's remarkably simple. Like, I would say refreshingly so.
School NES vibe of just simple pick up and play.
Yeah, like there's not anything going on in this game that you won't recognize from being, you know, a mild to moderate like NES fan, which I like because, you know, everything's got some kind of like complication nowadays, but this one is very uncomplicated. But it still presents a challenge, so that's nice. And yeah, so you go through the stages and you defeat the bosses. The bosses seem a little more like there's no robot masters here. Like it's the first stage is a cat.
Interesting.
Not a house cat, but maybe like a large house cat. Like maybe a mountain lion with house cat stripes. I don't know. But you defeat it, and then your irresponsible adult friend gives you yet another deadly weapon, and then you go through to the next stage. Or you can apparently choose to go back to other stages, which it seems like maybe this game has a little bit of a Metroidvania vibe, in that I did notice there was some stuff in the first stage that I couldn't get to yet, and I can probably go back and get them later.
Yeah.
So it's either that or the secrets are right there in the level, and I just didn't ever bother to find it, but
gotta get good, Chris. Get good.
I know. Gotta get better.
I mean, you just beat 3D World Runner, so you clearly have the talents.
I also beat Eight Eyes now. So oh, nice. Moving right along on that. But anyway, back to Venture Kid. I was especially amused at the fact that in the third stage, you're given rockets. By your adult friend.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so...
That's a liability.
I know. Like a cursed guitar. But, Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, the game sounds really cool. Are there any negatives to it?
So far, none. I had problems setting up my Xbox One controller with it, but we got that sorted out. Turns out that you might have to go into your settings and turn off the Steam config on the controller. Force it off, and then that fixed the problem immediately for me. So,
well, at least until they have it patched. It is a known issue. They are working on it. So hopefully by the time this is out and people hear it, it'll be either fixed or very close to being fixed. But it is a known issue.
Yeah, if you're playing version 1.0.0.0 and you've got an Xbox One controller, then, it can be fixed and they'll fix it later. But yeah, if you have problems, that's why. That is the only real issue I ran into. I wanted to also shout out, of course, the soundtrack. It's extremely good, very reminiscent of your Capcom action games, especially, like I said, Mega Man. I don't want to belabor the point that this game is pretty similar to Mega Man. I mean, it's clearly an homage. I mean, your gun looks like... It looks like your guy is like kind of just lobbing these balls. Like, but I guess he is shooting. Yeah, I guess he is shooting a gun. I mean, it's 8-bit. It's 8-bit graphics. You can't ever tell. Yeah. But the soundtrack was done by Matt Creamer, a.k.a. Norinrad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool as shit.
Yeah, yeah. And you can purchase the soundtrack, I believe, from his Bandcamp. And I suggest you do so, because if nothing else, this soundtrack is awesome. Also, I read that it's coming to the Switch as a console exclusive, so I'm definitely going to pick this up a second time.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know when. They announced it, I think, on the 16th last month. But yeah, this is a really impressive little game for a two-person team plus Matt Creamer, and I was very happy with it.
Nice. So $10 on this one, your official verdict?
$10, yeah, go ahead and get it. You know, if you have to wait a minute for an update patch or whatever, that's fine. But, I mean, I ran into the one problem that's known, and we were able to get past it in no time at all. So
yeah.
Go ahead and pick this one up. I mean, I guess wait on – if you really want to play this on a console, then go ahead and wait for the Switch release. But, I mean, it's – any old school, like, NES action fan is going to be – pretty satisfied with this.
Nice. And make sure you get the soundtrack too.
Yeah, go get it.
and then link me to it so I could go check it out.
Okay, I will.
But we have one final game to talk about tonight, and that is called Cast of the Seven Godsends, developed by Raven Travel Studios, published by Merge Games. This one released May 3rd on the Switch for $12.99. The evil Emperor Zaraima, I think, has kidnapped the infant heir to the land of Dareka, or Daresa. Why do games have to have these crazy names? I can't pronounce this shit.
You notice it's always the ones without voice acting, so they don't have to pronounce it themselves.
Yeah. Anyway, King Kandar must call upon the aid of the seven gods of that place as he traverses the six worlds of his kingdom in a bid to save his son. Can the king save his son and his kingdom, or will the place fall into the evil emperor's grasp? Because I don't want to try saying that town name again. So, Chris, tell us about Cast of the Seven Godsends.
Cast of the Seven Godsends. It took me a while to remember that title ever. I think I was just like the seven something whatever on Switch. I believe
with that's the seven dwarves. To it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. This game is it's an interesting platformer. It definitely reminded me of something you might see in an old arcade cab, probably by Taito. Something like Rostan or something, but it's a little more sophisticated. It definitely plays like this combination. It's like basically if Ghosts and Goblins controlled really well, mm-hmm. like you actually had like full control over the character, but it still had that like throwing stuff. Like every item is a kind of projectile. Actually, there is a sword, but it's actually kind of hard to get. It's a rare thing, but I thought there was a sword anyway. Maybe I think I got it the first time and then instantly didn't have it. So maybe I'm just misremembering it. But that's the thing about this game is that it has so many weapons and spells and like different things that you can do. That's really quite an interesting like concept as far as that goes. So you're running through this game. You start off in the place. Basically, you're the king and you're hanging out with the queen and your little baby, and demons come and kidnap the baby and also you. You kind of get dragged into it, and then you have to go and like try and find, you know, this baby being kidnapped by demons, I guess, and hopefully taken care of, because it's like a tiny baby, and I'm like, that's worrying. So you go through these stages, and quite often, and like I said, this is a little bit like Ghosts and Goblins, is that a column will pop up with an orb on it, and you break that open, and it'll like there'll be like an item inside, or armor upgrades for your character so he can take a couple extra hits. There's also a certain icon that when you grab it, it lets you then transform into one of the seven godsends, which are kind of the tack upon which the gameplay revolves. So that each of the godsends is like a whole different type of character with a whole different set of like powers and things that they can do. So you got like your fire armor god thing, which is shoots flames everywhere and like has high attack power, stuff like that. You have a lightning guy who he's got a whole different set of stuff. Then you have like a forest thing, which looks like a big frog, and you shoot little like bulbs that grow into plants, and the plants like I guess do like kind of bomb damage to the enemies, like kind of like a sticky mine, which is kind of interesting. And you also can like shoot vines and like climb up to high places and things like that. So there's all kinds of stuff to look at with those. And then each of them, like within those, you get certain types of magic that you can combine and use that. And they advertise that there's like 30 different kinds of like spell combinations that you can do. So it's a lot to look at. You get all kinds of weapons. And then, like I said, the enemies, your usual sort of platformer, you know, stuff. And the thing I like about this is that it actually shows HP damage. So you can kind of gauge what your weapons are doing versus each other, which is super handy. Also, it absolutely lets you know when you're making contact with the enemy, which some of the bosses, like the wizards and stuff, like they spend so much time floating around, like invisible, like you never know when you're actually able to hit them. Yeah. So that's kind of nice. So with that, you go through a variety of levels. I got pretty far in this one. I feel like if there's six levels, that either it's a pretty short game, or that there's like, you know, the last bit of the game, which I haven't gotten to yet, is like just hellaciously hard, which I've been playing so many NES games lately that that's just default what I expect. I'm just like, okay, so first five levels are fine and level six is absolute hell. So I don't know about that, but I do know that there are four difficulty levels, so, and you get unlockables for every level.
Ooh,
just little things.
Unlockables are always good.
Yeah, so little things here and there. The game definitely provides you with enough incentive to go through it many times, so that's really nice. Art style is interesting. It all looks hand-drawn. They keep saying it's 16-bit inspired, but I didn't really see that. It just looked more like an arcade game with hand-drawn, like, looks to me like kind of indie comic book style art. Mm. It's hard to place, but it's definitely like, it's not like super like commercial like looking art. Like it looks like somebody actually sat down and drew these things.
That's cool.
But it looks good. Soundtrack's good. And the one little thing about it to me is, I actually had to look it up. Apparently this developer is Italian. And so English is not their first language, and that does come up a little bit in the game. So you have a few little typos and mistranslations here and there, and they're very amusing. But the thing that annoys me is that when text appears, you can't speed it up, but you can immediately skip it. And so you can end up like missing out on the dialogue. Oh, just by.
I hate when that happens in games.
Yeah.
You hit the A button to so you could just see all of it, and then all of it is gone.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you just barely see the character portrait, and then they're gone. And you're like, what?
No, so, come back. I wanted to hear what you said.
I know, like, and you know me, it's like, even if it's a bad translation, I love it even more.
Yeah.
So, I was totally, like, the last time I was playing through this, I was trying to read every single bit of stuff, and even then, I still consciously trying to keep, you know, read all the dialogue, I still ended up accidentally skipping a couple of scenes. So,
oh boy.
Get on that, devs. Stop doing that.
No.
Let the person speed up the dialogue and then have to push the button again to skip.
Yes, like that. Exactly. That needs to be uniform in all games.
Yeah. But that's not an unforgivable crime. Honestly, this game is solid. It's nicely put together, and it's clear a lot of work went into it. So I approve of it.
Cool. So $13 on this one. What is your verdict?
$13. I mean, you know, it's so hard to recommend something for that price since there's so many actual arcade games that only cost $8. But I say go ahead and get it just to support the developer. And also, this is the kind of game that people, I think, are going to want to, like, really get into and explore and speed run and do all that kind of cool stuff. It's a worthy game. Let's say that much.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, Chris, thank you as always for coming on and chatting about this stuff. Thanks again to everyone who joined on this episode doing reviews, and Nick from Making Games for coming on and chatting about Raging Justice. That is it for this episode. Chris, do you have any final words to end it?
Don't buy cursed guitars.
Bye.